Welcome back to Words on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, and my co-host, Gwen Sheltimer. In this holiday season, we're sharing stories and poems written by local writers and a few old favorites, too. We'll start this second part of the show with a piece by a writer, Richard Parker, whose story was published in Family Ties, an anthology edited by Kim Grove, and she will read this piece for us, which is set in Toronto when the writer was a child. It's called A Different Christmas.
Just the mention of Christmas can bring back a childhood. When I was a little guy, about 5 years old, I remember a news flash that interrupted the TV program, telling my sister and I that an unidentified object was being monitored by NORAD and was heading our way. That was enough to convince us that Santa would soon arrive, so we didn't put up any fuss when Mom told us to go to bed. I was too young to notice that there was no Christmas tree in the living room, and too ignorant to realize that the most I would be getting in my stocking was an orange, an apple, and a few suckers. Dad had been laid off from Hydro for quite a while. Mom was working as a cashier at Powers, taking as many hours as she could so that food could continue to bless our table. Neither of them was looking forward to the disappointment their two children were going to experience. I don't remember ever wanting for anything, but I do remember never having anything of my own. We kids had to share everything, our toys, clothes, and even if my sister had been a boy, we would probably have had to share underwear. We didn't feel hard done by. That's just the way it was. We didn't realize that this particular year was going to be the worst. Dad couldn't get any work until the new year when he would be able to be rehired by Hydro, maybe. Excitement made it impossible to sleep. I remember listening to the sing-along with Mitch Christmas TV show. I could imagine Mom and Dad's heads bobbing along with the music. When there was a knock at the door, my imagination went astray, thinking that maybe Santa was tired of going down chimneys and had come to our door. My sister and I snuck out of our beds, ran to the stairs, and went down just enough steps to hear the guest without being caught where we weren't supposed to be. We saw person after person enter our home with something in their hands. Wrapped gifts, food, a turkey, and even a tree with decorations on it came in the door. All the people were from our Regent Park United Church that Mom took us to each Sunday. Mom played the organ and conducted the choir as her contribution to the church services. Now her church family was all coming to her aid. I remember thinking, why are these people bringing all this stuff? After all, Santa was on his way and he would bring everything. I looked over to my mother, who started to cry. It was my dad who scared me. He was crying too. I had never seen my dad cry. Never. I didn't think it was possible. Somehow all the church friends had found out that there wouldn't be much of a Christmas for us that year unless they helped. As they shared their gifts, Mitch Miller and his bouncing ball were singing "Oh, Holy Night." Is it any wonder that that is my favorite piece of Christmas music?
And now, Gwen, how about telling us a little about Christmas in other places? I know you have a story there about Zimbabwe, and I think it's based on your mother's experiences one Christmas.
Yes, it is. Christmas, of course, in Zimbabwe is unlike the Northern Hemisphere. It is very hot. Anyway, here's the story. It's called Solomon. Mother was an avid gardener and a miracle worker. She grew the delicate freesias, daffodils, and columbine of her English homeland under the hot Zimbabwe sun. But if Mother was a miracle worker, Solomon was her resident angel. Solomon came from the far north, so they were kindred spirits, both displaced and both with a strange, almost eerie affinity for nature. Solomon taught my mother how to grow native plants and often bought her gifts from the bush. He appeared at the kitchen door with freshly picked mushrooms in a large wooden bowl, flat white ones with deep purple underbellies, small buttons with long stems, and stubby toadstools of such brilliant colors that they seemed to have been plucked from my storybooks. Phineas the cook twisted his apron in his hands and predicted a dire end for us all. My ware, those mushroom is poison, madam. You will die. My ware. But Mother calmly thanked Solomon, took a small bowl, and picked out only the very best specimen of each kind. She took her time, examining them and making her choice. Sometimes she chose one, only to notice a better one, and return the first choice to the pile. Eventually, Mother returned the wooden bowl to Solomon. His brown eyes thanked her, and he disappeared to add the remaining mushrooms to his own supper. "I hope Solomon will be available for work tomorrow," Mother casually remarked to my father that evening. For her part, Mother taught Solomon a great deal, too. She taught him to make steaming piles of compost and trap slugs in bowls of beer. Solomon often joked that he would like to be a slug. She taught him to prune roses and graft fruit trees. If he ever wondered why Mother insisted on growing plants that belonged in another climate, he never questioned her. Instead, he wove intricate mats from the long elephant grass, and in the heat of the day erected them like sun umbrellas over the seedlings. Most of all, they understood each other's needs. Mother understood those strange times when a man feels the pull of a greater force and cannot rest until it is served. Solomon took off about 3 times a year. He left without warning and sometimes did not return for several days, and on rare occasions, several weeks. He packed nothing and returned as suddenly as he had left, and without explanation, resumed his work. Despite my father's protests, Mother never docked his pay or questioned him. She had no need for questions. She already knew the answers. Solomon understood Mother's needs too. One December, as Christmas approached, Mother sat in the shade of a purple bougainvillea and paged through an overseas magazine filled with Christmas pictures, holly, mistletoe, pine boughs, and red bows. Solomon worked nearby, and then without warning he downed tools and walked off into the bush. Mother watched him go, sighed, and resumed her reading. But about an hour later he returned, his upper body hidden by a mass of boughs, blue-green and spiky like blue spruce and junipers. With a grin, he laid them at my mother's feet. Pointing to the magazine, he held out his hand. In it were sprigs of white berries in leathery yellow-green leaves, just like mistletoe. Sunlight filtered through the blossoms overhead and cast a spotlight on my mother as she held the sprigs above her head, laughed out loud, and danced under her Christmas mistletoe.
What a lovely, lovely story.
Yeah, it's interesting to see perspectives of Christmas from other views.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And I know you have a favorite poem that you'd like to read that has a child's view or an animal's view and just a different view.
Yes, a longing for childhood and the beliefs of childhood, the faith. It's called The Oxen, and it's a very famous poem by Thomas Hardy. Christmas Eve and 12 of the clock. Now they are all on their knees, an elder said, as we sat in a flock by the embers, in hearthside ease. We pictured the meek, mild creatures, where they dwelt in their strawy pen. Nor did it occur to one of us there to doubt they were kneeling then. So fair a fancy few would weave in these years. Yet I feel if someone said on Christmas Eve, "Come, see the oxen kneel in the lonely barton or by yonder coombe," our childhood used to know, I should go with him in the gloom, hoping it might be so.
Thanks, Felicity. And now I think I'd like to read another favorite poem, not necessarily just Christmas, but winter in our country. This one of I think many listeners will know, and it's by the American poet Robert Frost. Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep.
It is a lovely poem. It's one that stays easily in people's minds, isn't it? Yes. Before we finish with one final poem, we want to say we hope you have enjoyed the holiday season stories we've brought you today, and that you'll find peace and happiness this season and always. If you would like to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our email, wordonthehills897@gmail.com, or connect with us at our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We also hope that you'll continue to tune in to Word on the Hills each week on Sunday at 1 p.m., right here on Northumberland 897, truly local radio. Happy holidays, everyone.
Christmas Bells by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I heard the bells on Christmas Day their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And thought how, as the day had come, the belfries of all Christendom had rolled along the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Till ringing, singing on its way, the world revolved from night to day, a voice, a chime, a chant sublime of peace on earth, goodwill to men.